Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
Good morning, I'm Carrie Miller. This is NPR News. Now in depth on what America First means as President Trump goes abroad. It's not uncommon for presidents who are mired in domestic crises to look forward to escaping on an overseas trip. But the investigations and the controversies that are swirling around President Trump so early in a presidential tenure are unprecedented in modern politics. When he boards Air Force One on Friday, the president's travel itinerary will take him to Saudi Arabia, Israel, and the Vatican. And he's also attending a NATO meeting. But the baggage of the crises he faces here will travel with him. So what does that mean for the president's credibility abroad? And how is he positioning the U.S. and the world beyond America First? What does America First mean now to our allies? Two guests. And your thoughts, too. If you voted for and still support President Trump, do you have a clearer understanding about what America First means in a global context? And if you oppose the president, are there particular measures or foreign policy doctrines that you're most concerned about? Here's the phone number, 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828, on Twitter, at Kerry, K-E-R-R-I, M-P-R. Terrence Zuplat is a former speechwriter for President Obama. He's the founder of Global Voices, and he joins us today from Washington, D.C. Terrence, welcome. It's very good to have you on the show.
Well, thanks for having me.
Corey Shockey is with us, research fellow at the Hoover Institute, and she was a senior policy advisor on John McCain's presidential campaign and has served in a number of roles at the National Security Council. And she's with us today from Palo Alto, California, where, Corey, I know it's early, so we really appreciate you getting up and being with us today. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Corey, the candidate that you worked for, Senator McCain, is, and you probably have seen this already, he's quoted as saying that these scandals that are facing President Trump and his team are reaching, quote, Watergate size. I wonder if on the face of that, you agree with that.
I do. Yeah. The suggestion that the president of the United States tried to persuade the FBI director to discontinue an investigation into Russian influence in the American government in the elections, I think it's scandalous and needs to be investigated.
Okay. And so what does it mean then, given what you've just said and your concurrence with Senator McCain, for the way this proceeds?
I think it will have two big effects on the president's overseas trip. The first is that the tumult of the kinds of revelations that we heard yesterday it will distract attention from anything the president is trying to accomplish overseas, right? Because he and the people around him will be constantly engaged in trying to put out the fire of the tumult in Washington. The second way I think in which it will affect the president's overseas trip, and here less in the Middle East than in Europe, is that it makes it more difficult and less beneficial for America's closest friends and most democratic allies to give the president what he's asking for, to stand up next to the president, to undertake joint initiatives.
And do you...
Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, do you say that because world leaders may feel tainted by standing next to someone who is confronting the kind of crises, some of his own making, let's say that President Trump is. Is that why?
Absolutely. Yeah, that is why, Kelly. That I think, the United States has two great powers, the power of intimidation and the power of inspiration. And most of what the United States achieves in the world is because other countries see what we stand for, see what we're trying to achieve, and work with us on that. And that is just much harder when we look like a terrible example of our own values.
Okay, Terrence, a lot to cover with you. First, back here domestically, how well can a president and his staff govern and do the things that they have to do to run a White House well in the kind of atmosphere that has developed?
Well, very simply, they can't. And we're seeing that every day. This is a White House that is in perpetual crisis mode. By all accounts, it's a chaotic atmosphere inside the White House. And so much of it stems not from the actions of others in the government, which is often, you know, hard enough to control a government as big and as unwieldy as ours can get. All of these problems stem directly from the temperament and actions and behavior of the president himself. And so time and again, we see aides, his press secretary, now his national security advisor, going out with one version of events, one story, only to have the president himself undercut them just hours later. And so they are in damage control mode. And again, we're dealing with a president now who's, before this even all broke, before the Comey firing, before the sharing of highly classified intelligence with a foreign adversary, his approval rating was already at just around under 40%. We're talking mid to high 30s. This president doesn't have any political capital left. Just as you know, the guest was saying a moment ago, you know, the ability around the world, the United States, to influence events is both part inspiration and part intimidation. That's true domestically as well. Mm-hmm. And already what we're seeing just in the past 48 hours, perhaps a tipping point where you have leaders like McCain saying that, you know, now equating this to Watergate. And so I think personally that whether he serves an entire term or not, regardless of what happens, I think he is essentially hobbled at this point. It is hard to see how a president recovers from so many scandals and so many missteps, again, of his own making, because they stem from his character and his temperament, and that's not going to change. It's hard to see how a president regains footing and can push forward on big issues like tax reform or health care when they can't even get through the day without a major crisis.
It does sound like you're saying, Terrence, both hobbled domestically, and you've just given reasons for that, but hobbled internationally, even though, I mean, the interests of the United States, of course, extend far beyond whoever is president. And there are a lot of reasons for countries to still care about what we're interested in and be interested in working with us. Isn't that right?
Oh, that's absolutely correct. I mean, just as the United States has interests around the world, every country that a president visits has interests and reasons for working with the United States, but also for not always cooperating with the United States. And the image and the standing and the respect that the president himself has around the world, we've seen this with both Republican presidents and Democratic presidents, translates and has a tremendous impact on the U.S. standing in the world and the ability of other nations to work with us. And this president, his America First agenda, his rhetoric, his anti-Muslim rhetoric, his anti-immigrant rhetoric, his anti-refugee rhetoric, these have consequences overseas. And so it will be difficult for many foreign leaders to stand and to stand next to him and to look as though there are partners with him. These foreign leaders have domestic constituencies as well that they have to be sensitive to. And so it is going to be very interesting to see the degree to which, especially in Europe, some of these leaders are willing to be seen and stand with Trump, who is just so toxic on the world stage.
A call that I think follows up well on this to Kate in Poposky, Minnesota. Hi, Kate.
Hello there.
Hi. What are you thinking about?
Just as the planet has an ecology, the business world has an ecology and an interconnectedness. And in their wisdom, the United Nations passed many rules and resolutions referenced to social justice issues, as in fair wages and the impact to the environment on all of our business practices.
Uh-huh.
And those rules were come across as an entire world. I don't know how, when we're gutting our EPA and gutting our Forest Service and our Interior and all of the environmental protections that have been put in place wisely, and how we're also breaking down issues in regards to fair wages in our own country, how do we have the moral rectitude to stand on the international, international stage when we're doing these things to our own country where we're undermining most of those things.
Corey, that's a good question about moral authority. What would you say to that?
I agree it's a good question, Carrie. A lot of the issues that the caller raises, though, are not recent issues, recent difficulties, recent challenges that the American government has struggled with. And I do think there is a material difference between the routine disappointments and failures in the functioning of American democracy and in the routine divisions that we have between liberals and conservatives about whether and how high a minimum wage should be, and the kinds of questions that we are facing now in a Trump administration about the constitutionality and legality of the president's actions. I do think there's a difference.
If you've just tuned into the conversation, two guests this morning on the idea of President Trump taking his first big multi-country international trip. He's headed to Saudi Arabia, Israel. He's going to a meeting of NATO and then spending some time at the Vatican. Of course, we're interested in the messages that he carries overseas, but we can't ignore some of the developments that have happened in the last 48 hours. So talking with our guests this morning about how a president maintains a certain kind of moral authority and an agenda, how he carries that overseas with the kind of controversy that's swirling around President Trump. And I also want to talk about what the idea of America first means four months into the Trump presidency. I mean, how are we better understanding this from the way he talked about it at the campaign? And that's what I'm asking you this morning. Do you have a better sense of what America first means? Whether you support or oppose President Trump, are there particular measures or foreign policy doctrines that you're most concerned about? 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828 on Twitter at Carrie NPR. Terrence, I wanted to ask you about the Iran deal, because there is a measure coming up for on the sanctions that President Trump would have to act on, as I understand. And as he's given some very conflicting messages about what he thinks about the deal. During the campaign, he said it was the worst deal ever. He now seems to be listening to some of the people around him. What do you think happens with this?
Who knows? What happens on any issue with this president is anybody's guess. But this, the Iran deal, and I think how President Trump responds to it, is going to be a real window into his approach to the world, because he has a fundamental choice to make. This was a deal put together not just by the United States, but by our closest allies in Europe, over many, many long negotiations. And the choice was basically to confront Iran's nuclear program with a combination of diplomacy, carrots and sticks, or to be on the path toward military confrontation. And as a result of that deal, there is a diplomatic arrangement that prevents Iran from obtaining a nuclear weapon. That's where we are right now. It's working. It's working as intended. No deal is perfect, but it is working. And so it would be a remarkable decision by a president to take a diplomatic deal that is working and completely undo it in some way, and then actually increase the risk of military confrontation, which would have the effect of probably accelerating Iran's striving for a nuclear weapon. So this is one of those key moments, you know, such as whether or not to stick with the Paris Climate Agreement.
Mm-hmm.
That will reveal what kind of president he's actually going to be. You know, as you say, he's said so many things on both sides of just about every issue. It's hard at any given moment to know what he actually believes. And I think this goes to an even broader point, which is that, you know, you asked earlier, you know, what does America first mean? I personally believe that it's simply a slogan. It's not a real strategy. I don't think this president, I think by this point, it's very clear that he does not have a coherent worldview. He does not have a strategy for dealing with the world. He's an improvising president. He makes it up as he goes. And what he says and does today might be completely different from what he says and does tomorrow. So the one clear result of America First is that it has sent terrible signals to the world that the United States will be turning inward and focusing inward on our needs first and the rest of the world, you know, the second, third, fourth, or last. So, but again, the Iran deal will be another test of whether he chooses to recognize that at times diplomacy can work and solve problems.
Okay.
This is one of those examples, or he's going to choose a more military path.
Let me grab a call here from Bill in Minneapolis. Bill, it sounds like you voted for President Trump. Is that right?
Yes, I voted for him out of really a rejection of what Hillary Clinton stood for. And what I think about Trump is I think he believes things. Now, whether or not you agree with them, he believes them and is willing to act on them. For example, illegal immigration. I mean, we have redefined it in terms of saying undocumented, but what he says is these people are here illegally, and he wants to do something about it. And whether or not you agree with him, I think the value of Trump is he forces us as individuals and a society to think about what we believe and why we believe it.
Okay.
And then act on this. I was in the military overseas, and I tell you something, I believe in America First because the rest of the world looks to America to solve their problems, usually by giving them money. And I think what Trump is saying, for example, with NATO, asking them to pony up to what they agreed to pay, to say the rest of the world, you've got to carry some of your own weight. And I think what America First is trying to communicate is, you know, we are not going to solve the world's problems by being the world's piggy bank.
Corey, what do you think? Bill, forgive me, there's a lot there, and I don't want to lose track of some of the points you made. Corey, what do you think about the last point that Bill made there?
You know, I think Bill raises a lot of really good points. And one of the challenges for establishment Republicans like me is to engage respectfully in a conversation to point out where we share their concerns. But then where we disagree or where some of the consequences of President Trump's approach might be more problematic, to see if we can come up with better ways to address them. So, for example, on the NATO allies, I think Bill's right, that we have allowed over the last 20 or 30 years more and more responsibility for Europe's security to migrate to the United States. And in what it should be a shared burden, Americans are rightly questioning why we should care more about the security of European states than those European governments and those European publics appear to care for themselves. So their defense spending is under 2% of GDP, and they committed as NATO allies to meet that standard. And so I think the president is right to emphasize that you are expecting us to bear greater burdens for your security than they are. Where I think I might differ slightly from Bill is that I, too, get exasperated with Europeans and wish we could trade them in for better allies. The problem is there don't seem to be better allies to be found anywhere, and we still very much need and want their help to achieve things in the fight to protect the United States, our ability to have trade agreements that are beneficial to the United States, and many other things that we want to accomplish.
You know, Corey,
and
Corey,
so we just need to keep at it.
Hang on. Yeah, I don't want to miss the thread of what you said at the beginning, and this, again, you concur with Bill on this. Terrence, this idea that President Trump is willing to take a fresh approach to some long-held conventional wisdom that may not ultimately, you know, prove to be accountably valuable to the United States. What's wrong with asking some hard questions, as Trump does, about some of these policies?
Oh, there's nothing wrong with asking hard questions. I mean, every president comes in with a fresh perspective and a fresh team and a fresh look, and they have an opportunity and they have a responsibility to ask questions about whether or not the policies that we've been pursuing are ones that are truly in our national interest or whether they're simply out of inertia. You know, to take the example that we've just been talking about, which is the defense spending of our European allies. What I think is important to remember is that, yes, this has indeed been a problem for many years, and this is something that the President Obama brought up repeatedly with our allies. And in fact, as a result of the Wales summit, the NATO summit that occurred several years ago, a number of allies did begin to turn the corner, and we did finally begin to see a change and an increase in defense spending. So it's a little odd for Trump to come in and act as though there has been no movement on this. Now, you can argue that there has not been enough movement, but I think it is important to remember some basic facts, and that this has been something that the previous administration worked on as well. And this is something that they can certainly build on. The related point is that, you know, this goes to questions of style and approach. Is the president's approach of trashing allies and dismissing some of our closest allies, like Angela Merkel, embarrassing her on the world stage, is that the way to get your closest friends and allies to come closer to what you want? We don't do that to our friends in our life. We don't do that to our coworkers. Well, we can't do that to our allies either. And so the question, I don't think anyone debates that our European allies should be spending more and investing more in defense. Again, that was a policy of the Obama administration. The question is how to do it. And so far, there is no indication that this kind of badgering of allies and humiliating allies is going to achieve the results we want. Again, these allies have domestic constituencies. They can't be seen as kowtowing to an American president. They have to look strong and confident as well. And so it will be fascinating to see how these leaders react to the president when he's in Europe in front of European audiences. We all should want every American president to succeed, especially overseas when they're representing our country. But if the past 2 years of rhetoric and the past several months of policies are any indication, this is going to be a very rough ride for the president for 9 days.
You know, Corey, I did wonder about, Terrence just brought up Angela Merkel, and now we have a new president in France, Emmanuel Macron. And I wondered what happens as Merkel and Macron leverage maybe the power of a close association, given what Terrence just said about the way Trump, some of the things he said about Europe and some of the things, the way he behaved with Angela Merkel. I mean, how do they dial in, I guess, on the power of their association, and what would it mean for President Trump?
It's a really good question. I think concerns about the reliability of the United States and the value of working with the United States in the Trump administration are only one of the major factors that are pushing Macron and Merkel together towards cooperation. The British decision to leave the European Union is another major factor, and concern that the British example might set off a further fracturing among the EU membership. And a third big element driving Macron and Merkel together is the continued parlous state of the European financial, the European currency, and the threat Greece continues to pose and bad banks in Italy continue to pose to the strength of the currency union. So I think they have a lot of good reasons to want to work together. A fourth good reason I would put is the urgent need to reform the EU to regain confidence of many Europeans that were also trending toward the kind of populism that in the United States elected Donald Trump.
Right. Corey Shockey is one of our guests this morning. If you've just gotten in on the discussion, she's a research fellow at the Hoover Institution and was a senior policy advisor to Senator John McCain. And Terrence Zuplot is with us. He's a former speechwriter for President Obama and the founder of Global Voices. We've asked them to come in and give us their insight and their guidance on what it means as President Trump leaves on Friday for an important trip overseas, going to a NATO meeting, going to Saudi Arabia and Israel and the Vatican. And of course, he carries a lot of the baggage of the controversies and scandals that are swirling around him now. And we're taking note of what happens as he comes up against some of the alliances that he'll encounter in Europe. But we haven't talked yet about Israel and Saudi Arabia. I want to do that as well. But I also want to ask our guests on the other side of news about something that National Security Advisor H.R. McMaster has been saying about what America First means. He says it doesn't mean that America First means America is going to go it alone. Quote, to the contrary, prioritizing American interests means strengthening alliances and partnerships. So I'll ask Corey and Terrence, and perhaps you'd like to weigh in on this as well, is if that's what we see, that President Trump is strengthening some of these important alliances. 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828 on Twitter, at @KerryNPR. Back to your calls on the other side of news, but to Mike Moen right now with the latest. Hi, Mike.
Good morning, Kerry. Russian President Vladimir Putin is offering to turn over to Congress records of President Trump's discussions with Russian diplomats, in which Trump is said to have disclosed classified information. Putin says he would turn them over if he has permission from the White House. Israeli officials have sought to downplay any damage caused by President Trump's disclosure of classified information to those senior Russian officials that was provided by Israel. They're praising Israel's robust security cooperation with the U.S. just days before the president is due to arrive for a state visit. The U.S. Army says Private Chelsea Manning has been released from a Kansas military prison after serving 7 years of her 35-year sentence for leaking classified government materials to WikiLeaks. An Army spokeswoman says the transgender soldier was released from Fort Leavenworth earlier today. Former President Barack Obama granted Manning clemency during his final days in office. And Republican Senator Tom Tillis of North Carolina says he's fine after collapsing during a Washington, D.C. race, being taken away by ambulance. The 56-year-old was seen on the ground being treated by bystanders at about 15 to 20 minutes into the three-mile race. Tillis at first appeared unconscious but was revived and breathing when taken away by ambulance. We are expecting more showers and thunderstorms across parts of the state today, including southern Minnesota. Some of those storms could produce heavy rain. Right now in the Twin Cities, it's 65 degrees. More news ahead on Minnesota Public Radio News. It's 9:33.
Every Wednesday on All Things Considered, get a taste of regional food and drink trends, reviews, recipes, and advice. Our stable of food experts serve it up on Appetites. I'm Tom Cran. What's news and what's for dinner? Join me starting at 3.
I'm Tom Weber. Coming up at 11 on NPR News, Minnesota's and the nation's dental crisis. How are disparities created in dental care? And what should Minnesota do after a recent warning about its care for low-income children? We'll discuss all of that at 11.
I just got the ticket count for the show with Sheryl Sandberg at the Fitzgerald Theater on Sunday, June 4th. These tickets are flying out of there. If you want to be at the show, better go on the Thread website or to the Fitzgerald box office and get your tickets. Sunday, June 4th, I'm in conversation with Sheryl Sandberg, and I'll see you there.
Programming on Minnesota Public Radio is supported by the University of Minnesota School of Nursing, driven to improve quality of life for people living with Alzheimer's disease and the people who care for them. Learn more at nursing.umn.edu.
Back to our conversation now on President Trump's first big trip abroad, Saudi Arabia, Israel, the Vatican, a NATO meeting. Our guests Terrence Zuplot and Corey Shockey into the phones here to Kent in Minneapolis. Hi, Kent. Hey, thanks so much for waiting.
Hello.
Hi. Go right ahead.
My basic thought is there is a consistency to Trump's policy, and that is that Trump advocates for Trump. He uses these other catchphrases, America First, visits to the Vatican. Whatever he does to make himself feel good about him. That's basically it.
Terrence, I'm sure plenty of presidents have political self-interest, but they also have to think about how they're representing and positioning the United States in the world. What do you think of what Kent's concerned about?
Well, I think Kent is exactly right. You said presidents have to think. I think presidents should think about how their policies and their behavior position the United States, and I would agree with your caller. I don't think this president does that. I wish we could have a kind of normal discussion about a president and his administration's worldview, their strategy, how they see our interests, how they see us balancing competing interests around the world and a very complex security environment. Yeah, I wish we could have a normal conversation like that. Unfortunately, we don't have a normal president right now. We have someone who is, by all accounts, focused exclusively on himself. His lack of impulse control, which is at the root of so many of the problems we're seeing. And so I am very concerned about the next 9 days. Foreign trips by a president are incredibly intense. They're exhausting. They're demanding. Mm-hmm. They are high wire acts in the best of times. And particularly the choice of these particular countries, Saudi Arabia, Israel in particular, the Vatican, where you have a mixture of politics and religion, incredibly fraught. And nothing we've seen over the last few months gives us much hope that the president is going to be able to thread these needles carefully in a way that doesn't create more problems with each stop. And so I do think that we have to sort of step back and remember we're not in normal times. And so much of what we're seeing is a result of the president's temperament and character. And that gives us that creates a great deal of danger for the next 9 days, I think.
Corey, that was interesting. I hadn't thought about it in terms of how exhausting and how focused a president and their staff have to be on these trips. And then all of the competing interests that you have to navigate while you're meeting these different leaders. I think that brings us back again to kind of where we started, where we asked, with what's happening back here in Washington, how does President Trump and his team bring that kind of focus to these meetings?
Boy, I sure think you're right, Terry, that it's a very high degree of difficulty trip. There are going to be a lot of awkward questions. The president's first trip overseas is to Saudi Arabia rather than Canada, Mexico, or Europe. And it sounds like the administration has sky-high expectations that the president's going to give a major speech on Islam as a religion, which, it's hard for any American president to pull off the delicate diplomatic navigation of talking about another culture's religion and how not another culture's religion, it's also America's religion, Islam, but speaking to majority Muslim countries about what we think their religion to be is a very delicate task. And I agree that President Trump, even in the best of circumstances, doesn't have delicate political sensibilities.
So
also on the NATO front, the NATO Secretary General was extraordinarily diplomatic in Washington a couple of weeks ago when President Trump claimed that NATO used to be full of freeloaders, but now because of his influence, NATO allies are paying up. And the NATO Secretary General diplomatically did not point out that's just not true. So there are a lot of bad news stories, a lot of presidential petulance that potentially could be unleashed in the course of this and will defeat all the efforts for the achievements he wants to gain.
Corey, looking again at what H.R. McMaster, who I should ask you both, I mean, who many people admire and think is a valuable influence on President Trump. Do you agree with that, Corey?
I do. He's personally a friend of mine. I was relieved when he was assigned the job of National Security Advisor. I most certainly think the administration is better off with him as National Security Advisor than they were with his predecessor and that they would have been with many other potential choices for the job.
Terrence, you think he's a valuable influence on the president and his team?
It seems so. I personally don't know him. I've never worked with him. One of the early things that we learned is that in his first days, he reportedly counseled the president to step away from the habit of constantly referring to radical Islamic terrorism out of fears that it It kind of made this into a religious conflict and actually fed into the narratives that are put out by terrorist organizations like Al-Qaeda and ISIL. And so that was certainly an encouraging sign. You certainly would prefer to have people around this president who are honest brokers and honest voices as opposed to enablers of his worst instincts. But again, ultimately, so many of these decisions are going to be made by the president himself, as we see every day. It's up to the president whether or not he jumps on Twitter and fires off some irresponsible tweets. It's up to the president whether he goes off script in an interview and basically admits that the Russia investigation was a reason that he fired the FBI director. So, you know, obviously, you prefer responsible, thoughtful people around this president. But again, ultimately, there's only so much you can do when you have a president that's this impulsive.
Well, okay. Given what you've just said, that this is what I wanted to ask you. I read that quote that H.R. McMaster gave to the L.A. Times about, you know, America first doesn't mean going it alone, and it's really about prioritizing American interests, strengthening alliances and partnerships. How much behind the scenes, given what you've just said about President Trump, the impulsivity, some of the other issues, can an astute staff work to do what McMaster is talking about, strengthen those alliances, smooth over? I mean, how much does it really matter that the president says one thing, but everybody has an interest in building these alliances?
Sure. Well, this is one of those examples where McMaster is very much speaking for sort of the traditional foreign policy establishment of both parties that recognize the value of alliances. But again, that's at odds with so much of what the president has said for the past 2 years. And I think it's fundamentally at odds with the way the president's core base of supporters hear the phrase America first.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think his supporters see America first as a vehicle for strengthening alliances around the world. I mean, they do view this as a coming home, stopping nation building abroad, doing less in the world, and doing more unilaterally. And so your question about, you know, how much can they do, I think this entire team, and we're seeing this every day, they are in just constant damage control mode. What they are trying to do is limit the damage being done by the president himself. We're simply not seeing many affirmative, positive foreign policy moves by this president, by this administration. And so you have, you know, able and highly qualified people like Defense Secretary Mattis. You have McMaster in the White House. But again, it all goes back to the president, his temperament. You can only do so much, and you're going to be each day you're going to be playing damage control. And I just think that what a loss for our country. What that means is that rather than doing big things, rather than partnering with the world on something like climate change, rather than partnering with the world on anti-poverty programs, or rather than deepening our alliances in Asia to deal with a very assertive China, we're just dealing with these tactical little fights every day where the White House and the Pentagon and the State Department are trying to contain the damage wrought by this president in the court through his words and his deeds. It's a tragedy for the country. I just, obviously, I'm coming from the perspective of someone who worked for President Obama for 8 years. But I do think that even if you voted for Trump and we all want our president to succeed, the question is, at the end of the day, is this approach, is this behavior, or is this style going to strengthen our alliances around the world and make other countries want to work more closely with us or less? And
okay.
I think we see every day.
Let me do this. I just want to update on some of the news that's been happening in the hour that we've been on the air. House Speaker Paul Ryan made some comments about the Comey memo and the investigations. You'll hear more about that in our news coverage. House Democrats at this hour are speaking out amid the Comey memo and some of the implications of that. And President Trump is due to speak at the Coast Guard Academy in the next hour. And so no word yet on whether he'll make any remarks about some of the reporting that has happened in the last 24 hours. But that's the latest in stories that change hour to hour. Let me grab a call here from Jeff in southwest Minnesota. Jeff, I really appreciate you waiting. I know it's been a while, but thank you. What are you thinking about?
So I think first and foremost, I think he has a very unorthodox style. There's no doubt about that. I think that with Xi Jinping and some of the things that he's done with China, I think is a fabulous step to help us move the bar forward.
Uh-huh.
I think that the politicians and the media are having a field day with this, being able to point fingers. The politicians can kind of rest assured that, well, we're going to make him look bad so that way people won't want to hire another non-career politician into the spot. And I think that there's a lot of really frustration on Trump's side because of the fact that he has to overcome all of the political anxiety of people trying to save their jobs and kind of do things, not work with him.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's very unfortunate and sad in this day and age that people across the aisle are not working with each other.
Well, he does.
And that actually has to.
I mean, Jeff, he has a Republican majority. So,
yeah,
you know, he's
that,
set
but,
up
know,
pretty
Republican
well to have people work with him.
It can, but even the Republican Party this day and age is fragmented as well. And I think that it's just, I'm not pointing at Republicans or Democrats. I'm saying that it's just the politicians as a whole don't really want to go across the aisle and work together. Even in Minnesota, it's very difficult.
Yeah.
So it's just really polarizing, and it's frustrating.
Corey, what do you make of that? And Jeff, you hang on to the line here for a second, because you may want to respond to what she says.
Yeah, I agree with Jeff. I do think that the demise of bipartisan cooperation is bad for the country. And I think presidents of both parties and political leaders of both parties are to blame for it. It seems to me that the whole evolution of the Obama administration might have been different if the president's instruction to Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid had been, I want a health care bill that 10 Republicans in the Senate can support. And I think it will be even harder for Democrats to work with President Trump because of a lot of the issues that we've already talked about in this cycle, that the Democratic base will be fired up by a lot of the value signals that the president is laying down, even if the president himself pretends that he is working in a bipartisan way. The last thing I would say on this, Carrie, is that the best thing that happened to President Reagan in his time was losing control of the Republicans losing control of Congress because it forced him to work in a bipartisan way.
Uh-huh.
And that gave a broader political base for the kinds of changes he wanted to make.
Jeff, what do you think of the potential eventuality of that and that Trump becomes a much more consensus builder because he has to?
I would love that to happen, but I think that the challenges that I still see right now is that the parties still are not going to come together. And I think that's the real big challenge right now is it's all about really pushing their agendas and trying to, you know, just say all the things that they've done or they've stopped Trump versus sitting down at the table and figuring out what's realistic, what's common sense. There's so much in this country that we can do common sense-wise that we just don't do because of politics. And it's very frustrating. So it would be great to see kind of the good old days where people get together. They might not agree with everything, but they can agree to disagree or work with things to come to a common core agreement on certain things. And we just don't do that.
May I jump in one more time, Carrie?
Yeah.
Just to say that I actually think one of the longer-term results of the kind of tumult we are experiencing in the Trump administration is a great national kind of sigh of exhaustion and desire for a lot less interesting politics going forward, and that may actually incentivize the kind of cooperation for political leaders to say, yes, we're going to have to make compromises we don't like, but it's for the greater good, and we need to solve some of these national problems.
You know, Terrence, I think of when I hear Jeff talking about this, I think of a measure like infrastructure. And early on, President Trump talked about this investment in infrastructure. You saw a lot of Democrats on Capitol Hill saying that they would be willing to work with him on that. I wonder if all of these scandals, you know, his deep unpopularity, the scandals, the controversies have made it much less possible for Democratic leaders to even work together on a bill that I think a lot of Americans would like to see pass, given depending on its details, of course. Go ahead.
That's right. I mean, we were talking earlier about how the president is, you know, very toxic abroad, and he's very toxic at home. It's be very difficult politically for any Democrat, particularly vulnerable Democrats in districts, swing districts, to work with this president. And, you know, just going back to your caller's point, this is one of those perennial desires we all have, is we do want our politicians and our politics to be a more compromised base. We do want to reward politicians who forge common ground. And that everyone has a responsibility on that, Democrats, members of Congress, the president as well. And, you know, just to look back, the last time we had a president who was elected without winning the majority of the vote, or even a plurality of the vote, George W. Bush, you know, came into office. And we forget this sometimes, but he did in many ways reach out to Democrats.
He did.
People forget that he worked with Ted Kennedy on No Child Left Behind.
Right.
He made sincere efforts to do that and to forge some sort of bipartisan consensus on issues where there could be progress.
What about immigration? You know, he really wanted to try to pass some immigration reform bill, and his own party bucked him on that.
Right. And so the question is, have we seen that sort of sincere effort on the part of this current president? And, you know, we haven't.
No.
And so,
no.
You know, to put it mildly, we haven't. He's one who you know, takes to Twitter to go to war with his political allies and to insult them and humiliate them. You don't make deals with, you know, Chuck Schumer, the Senate Majority Leader, by calling him crying Chuck all the time, which is what the president does. I mean, this is not the behavior of a responsible president who's sincerely interested in working with his political opponents. And again, that's why I think so often we keep slipping into these kind of normal discussions of what ought to happen or what should happen, and yet we're constantly drawn back to the fact that we are dealing with an incredibly unusual president, one who oftentimes, as was noted in some research, behaves more like a child sometimes than an adult, and that has ramifications every single day.
Mark says on Twitter here, the GOP in 2009 embraced an absolute obstructionist strategy as a shortcut back to power. Make Obama a one-term president. Corey, Democrats have not forgotten that.
Yeah, it certainly did not facilitate greater bipartisan cooperation, but that also doesn't excuse President Obama's culpability in that. President Obama campaigned in 2008 as a great uniter of the country, and he didn't govern that way. So I don't think Republicans are uniquely guilty in this regard. I think it has been a general trend in American politics, and to some extent has to do with the structure of electoral districts that are becoming increasingly partisan.
Terrence, what do you want to say?
Well, obviously, you know, it takes two to tango, right? I mean, in order to govern, you have to have, in a unified way, you have to have a partner. It is true that the Republicans very early on decided that they were not going to facilitate the President Obama's agenda that he ran and got elected on. You know, those of us in the White House, there were many moments. I always find it amusing when I hear people say that the president didn't try hard enough to work with Republicans. And obviously, by the end of the administration, it's a different situation. But there were so many moments throughout the health care debate or other debates where the president kept reaching out, kept holding out the promise of some bipartisan compromise that Republicans would work together. How many times did he meet with John Boehner? In the hopes that they could strike a deal, to the point where President Obama was often mocked by critics, by Democrats, for being naive that he could ever work with these Republicans. And so I think it is important to remember that you do have to have a partner. You have to have a partner to work, and that's on all sides.
Okay, a call here from Carlos in Minneapolis. Hey, Carlos, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Glad you're getting in on the tail end here of the conversation. What are you thinking about?
I just have a comment. I just want to say this. I did vote for Trump, and I did vote for the president, for Trump, thinking about, oh, he's from out there. He's a businessman. He's an outsider.
Mm-hmm.
He's not from the government. But after all this time, after all these days, and after all these controversies and everything, I just realized that was very wrong, that we need somebody professional in there, that we need somebody who knows what he's doing and how hard it is to run this country, and something that a lot of us really didn't know. I think a lot of people didn't have any idea how our government works. I didn't. And now I kind of came to my sense of learning how, like, wow, this is really hard.
Corey, what do you think?
Wow, I think that's really inspiring. I, you know, in a strange way, President Trump may end up being extraordinarily good for American democracy because we are all getting an education on the importance of civic education, on the importance of civic engagement, on the importance of a robust free media and checks and balances in our system. I really want to commend the caller for being open to change his mind when he sees things aren't working out as he expected that they would, as he had hoped that they would. That actually makes me really hopeful for our country.
Corey,
so thank you to the caller.
And thank you, Corey, for the insight and the benefit of your experience in the conversation. Really good to have you today.
It's been a pleasure, Carrie.
Thank you. Terrence, a thought on Carlos. I've got about a minute left here. A thought on what Carlos said.
I think I would agree. It's inspiring. And one of the biggest questions we face right now is which is going to be stronger and more durable, the actions of one man who happens to be president of the United States or the institutions that define our democracy, our courts, our legislative branches, our press, our citizens, our civic engagement. And so I think one of the things we're seeing that our institutions are a lot stronger than maybe we realized, and it's going to be a rough ride. But callers like Carlos and our institutions give us hope.
Terrence, thank you so much for the insight. So valuable to have your experience as part of this conversation. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Just reminding you again that President Trump leaves on Friday on this trip to Saudi Arabia, Israel. He's going to visit NATO headquarters during a trip to Brussels and go to the Vatican. He is speaking today at the Coast Guard Academy, and we are also seeing reporting now of what members of Congress, Republicans and Democrats, are saying about some of the details of the Comey memo. So stay tuned to us through the day. Lots of developments to keep track of, and we'll have them right here for you on NPR News.